Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Grant Napier Show.
This is the Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie.
This team, there he is again. My good
Doug Christie, what a pass. Men against boys.
The Grant Napier Show with Doug Christie.
Crouches, gets a step to the baseline. Right, oh, job with the right hand. Oh, boy.
Now, Grant Napier.
All right, DC is back. We've got almost a four-hour show. We get you to baseball coming up at 6:45. We've got NFL stuff still going on, which is a daily event. You got baseball with I've never understood this. You know, I'm watching the Dodgers-Giants game last night, and Kershaw's breezing. He had a very easy eighth inning, three up, three down, couple of strikeouts. They take him out. You know, his pitch count, I think he was at 106.
Come on.
After eight.
Right.
It's Clayton Kershaw. And you take him out in the bullpen. You know, again, your closer's out for 4 to 6 weeks. And you lose a very important game. It's just unbelievable to me.
Well, you know what? Just like the A's last night, you know, Familia doesn't get it done. Trident right. comes in and gets it done. If you don't have someone down there that can step in and fill the shoes after your ace goes out in Clayton Kershaw, or – just ride him, Grant. I mean, look, if he's only at like 100 and some pitches, you got to trust him enough to put him in the ninth inning. And if he gets in trouble, then bring somebody in. But give him the opportunity to close it out. That was a big game to lose for the Dodgers.
Yeah, a huge game to lose. And, you know, the Giants are on life support. And they're just trying to, you know, stay in it, and hopefully get on a run where they win 8 of 10 or 9 of 10 games. Because, you know, when you look at them, they're only 5 back. I mean, that's it. Let me repeat. They're only 5 back. And when I say life support, I'm saying that because they're 5 back in fourth place. They're not 5 back in second place. So 5 back in fourth place is much different than being 5 back in second place.
It absolutely is. The Giants, I don't know. That's going to be a tough one because it's not like the teams in front of them are playing bad. The Rockies now, of course, they beat the Dodgers, and the Diamondbacks are playing some good baseball. When you talk about my M's and the A's, that was a tough one. I have to give it to the Athletics. They you know what's interesting, Grant? I don't know, did you watch the game last night?
Yes.
Yeah, they're similar in a lot of ways, meaning they got some guys with some pop that can knock it out of the park. The A's have been manufacturing runs, figuring out ways to go. They never get out of it. They run pitch counts up, and the M's weren't doing that early. They did it late. I mean, there was some balls that were just by the A's that were just slapped out into the field by just getting runners on base and then producing runs. And both of those teams, they fight, and that's been the MO of both of them. So hopefully another good one tonight.
All right, 339-1140. That's 339-1140. 800-920-1140. I think when you look at the A's and you look at the Mariners and you look at the Astros, this thing is coming down to the wire because there were 8 games left between the A's and the Mariners. The Astros, you got to figure at some point when they get some of their bodies back, are going to make that push towards the end of the season. I know it's a cliche that every game is big. Right now in this race, every single game is big. Like, had the Mariners come back and completed that comeback, that would have been huge for
monumental.
The Mariners and devastating for the A's.
It would have been.
Even though it's only one game. That would have been – that's a momentum type of a swing coming off a 4-game sweep over Houston. Oof. If the Mariners could have completed that, they're like, oh, here we go.
Yes.
You know?
And for the A's – the ability to win a game like that because where were they before? Before the Angels, they almost did the exact same thing and give a game away. So these are games that the A's have to win. They win 8-7 versus the Angels. They win 7-6 versus the M's. And you think about that; those two games could have went either way.
Right.
That's big time in the wins and loss column.
Yeah, no question. All right, football news with preseason again. Getting going on Thursday, we go back to injuries, all right? And, you know, how many guys are going to be knocked out for the season this week? Unfortunately, there are going to be a couple,
yes.
And you hate this, and you just hold your breath. And I say this because, you know, you all want your team to get through preseason without any major injuries, you hold your breath and you're hoping that your team can skate through. But it is the if you eliminate preseason, you're still going to have injuries. Look at all the guys that are getting hurt at practice.
Yes, that's where you're seeing a lot of it at. Speaking of that, Saquon Barkley, your take on maybe a strained hamstring and what that might mean. Is this something that you hold him out for the rest of the preseason, or you just kind of go with his ability to manage pain? I personally, Grant, if I was you guys, I wouldn't gamble Saquon Barkley. I'd shut him down and make sure he's ready for the beginning of the season.
Oh, yeah. There's no reason. Absolutely. I wouldn't play Odell Beckham either, even though he has not played in a real football game in a long time. I don't need to see Odell Beckham play in a real football game.
Yeah.
You know?
You've seen what – I mean, his footwork is impeccable. You can see that he's catching the ball. He is ready to go, and he's in a really good state of mind. So, yeah, I wouldn't do that either. Your take on the sensitivity of some of the athletes in the press. I don't know if you saw what happened.
Yeah, Jacksonville
kinda,
and everything.
Yeah, kind of going back and forth.
I'll tell you exactly what it is. Guys make so much money now, they just feel they can say whatever they want, whenever they want, and they don't really care about the recourse or the ramifications. That's what I think is happening in a lot of these situations. So they get fined $500,000. In this case, you know, Ramsey doesn't get to practice for a week in the heat of Florida and training camp.
Probably
it's like
good.
A vacation for him.
Probably
he doesn't
good for
care.
Him.
He doesn't care if it's going to cost him. He doesn't care. These guys make so much money that there's the ramification or the recourse for stupidity isn't enough to prevent you from doing it in a lot of instances. That's what I think. Like when you see players in the NBA. Question officials' calls, knowing full well that it's an automatic $25,000 fine. You have a lot of guys. James Harden's making $600,000 a game. Okay, Mike Conley, when he signed his deal, it came out to about, and again, give or take, because I don't have it right, about $350,000 a game. So let's just say you're making $300,000. I'm going to even go lower. You're making $300,000 a game, and you got 82 games a year. Who the hell cares if you get a $25,000 fine? Like, they don't even think about it. That's what I think is going on with a lot of these comments that you said about the media and everything. Players now make so much money that getting fined and or even suspended for a game doesn't alter their life in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, so for a lot of people who like them to quote-unquote keep it real, that's what's happening. You're seeing their true thoughts as opposed to the censored version that we've seen for a long time where guys would, you know, I'm going to keep it PC. I'm going to keep it along the lines of, you know, what they do for the Patriots, for instance. They don't go outside the box. They know what it is. We keep it in here. But a lot of the times now we're seeing – and understand that the press necessarily does – it doesn't mean that they're your enemy, but they're not your friend in the way that, look, if I'm there, I'm going to report what I see, and that happened, and guys aren't liking that.
There are too many athletes that are so sensitive, overly sensitive, and they think that they can dictate and kind of, you know – With a bullying tactic, which is what Jalen Ramsey did, you know, basically saying my teammates aren't going to talk to you and things of that nature. Come on. You know, it's stupidity is what it is. And here's the other thing. You know this because you were never in this situation, but you've been with teams where you've seen teammates. The worst thing you can do as a professional athlete is get the media in your town against you. There is nothing worse for an athlete than having this happened to David Price in Boston last year. How stupid are you?
And that's a bad place
to
have.
No, absolutely. And it's happened with athletes in New York and Philadelphia. Let me tell you something. There is nothing worse as an athlete than having the media in the town that you play for and they're not supposed to, but they're human beings, be upset at you because you bully them or what have you. It's not good.
And why you say that, so for our audience, is when you go on the road, those people could care less. So you can expect things and different stuff to be written about you. But when you're at home and you still don't get a break, it can be absolutely tough. That's why. And that doesn't mean that you got to suck up to them, but you have the ability to have a relationship and conversations, and therefore there's some trust and respect that's usually built up.
All right, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Again, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. 11:40. You know, again, we go back to this. It's at some point when you make that type of money, even if you're an NBA player, you get paid, you know, for games. You don't get paid for practice. So if you're a NBA player with the average salary, even if you get docked 1/82nd of your pay because you did something stupid and get suspended, that's not a deterrent. There's no deterrent there. That you won't even feel it. You won't even know that that was taken out of your paycheck.
Yeah, until you get about 45 like me, and then you think about all the stupid things that you said and that you did, and you go, man, I really wish I had that right now. That would be fantastic. But the money is, and maybe, well, you can't do that with Players Association. I was going to say maybe you make it equatable to percentage-wise and different things, but Players Association isn't going for that. So some of these things, you're right. Guys are just like, it doesn't matter to me. I'll take a fine, and I'll move on.
All right. Again, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. That's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We have the first game 3 weeks from Thursday night. We're talking about getting ready for the season. We're talking about the NFL schedule. And I'm looking at the rumors coming out of Oakland. And still, day 19.
Come on.
No Khalil Mack. Nothing of substance going on from what we understand. No talks going on. And with each passing day, you ask yourself, what is going on between the Raiders and Khalil Mack's representatives?
I guess this is more to Raiders fans out there listening, but it's to you as well, Grant. At what point do you get worried about this? And does this surprise you that there's been such a lack of communication with your – make no mistake about it. He is your star on the defensive side of the football. Does that surprise you?
Nothing surprises me with the Raiders because they're the most unconventional team in all of football, and they have been. And they don't do anything the way you would want them to do, and they don't do anything the way other teams do. So nothing surprises me with the Raiders at all. Like nothing. Okay. Like absolutely nothing surprises me. But you asked me when you would get concerned.
Yes.
All right. If I'm a fan of the Raiders, they have their first game on the 10th. It's a Monday night against the Rams. If Khalil Mack is not in camp on Monday, September 3rd, 7 days before they play their first game,
you're worried.
When you start your preparation for that game,
right?
I'm worried.
Yeah. I mean, when you say preparation, you mean laying out schematics of game plans.
Everything.
On both sides of football, all the meetings that go into.
Right. And you know, anyone that's played football will tell you this.
Yes.
We saw it with Bosa. You know, guys come back, even if they miss camp and they're working out on their own, it's not football. And very often you'll see a groin pull, you'll see a strain, you'll see guys get hurt when they think they can just go from not playing football and within a few days you're going full speed on the football field. It's not as easy as some people think.
It's not. And to the fans out there that probably just heard Grant's statement and they're going, come on. He should feel great. He hasn't been hitting and all these things. Because there's a total difference when he's probably, let's just call him 280 pounds, whatever he is, and he is rock solid. So he's going to come off and he's going to hit a dummy. The dummy isn't pushing back. So the strain that goes on a groin, the strain that goes on a foot, the strain that goes on him leveraging off the ground is totally different when there's someone across from him that's 320 pounds and it's coming with super force. If your muscles, ligaments, tendons, all the different connective tissue doesn't get used to that type of strength, and that's what training camp does, it's easy to get hurt doing that.
I mean, if you go on the Oakland Raiders webpage and look at their roster.
Mm-hmm. Don't say it. Don't say
no,
he's not
even
there.
No, he's not.
Come on.
I'm just telling you.
So I guess – but – see, this is where that's like super petty. Like if you got a list of petty, that's super petty. Because it's not that he doesn't have a contract. He has a contract. So why then don't you put him up there? Is it just to peeve him off a little bit?
The guys that are there have their name on there. So.
Wow. That's that goes
so true. Anyway, but back to your initial question. If I'm a fan of the Raiders, I worry about it if he's not there by September 3rd. That's when I worry about it.
Well, Raiders fans, I would love to hear from them because this, I can understand this with, and I don't mean this in a bad way. I can understand it with some lesser players that, but this guy is the guy that kind of sets the table for the defense. Similarly to what we're seeing with Aaron Donald and the Rams, he is the guy, from my understanding, not only Grant on the defensive side of the football, but also in the locker room, a lot of different things. Now, it sounds like they're working towards a solution and a resolution for his contract, though.
Have you been following the story out of College Park, Maryland, with the player that passed away on May 29th?
I just saw it.
Okay.
But yes, I know.
Have you, in your basketball career, whether it was college, I'm not going to go back to high school, mm-hmm. whether it was college or the NBA, did you ever play for someone where, as an athlete, you thought they're overdoing it to a point where somebody could really be in trouble? When I mean overdoing it, I'm talking about it from a physical fitness perspective, from a workout perspective, whereas you had a bad practice and they ran you to death. And I hate to use that as a pun because, unfortunately, Jordan McNair died from heat stroke.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in that situation where you thought, man, they're doing it, this is too much?
I'm going to go back to high school and, okay. and then I'm going to okay. come to college a little bit. And I'm going to go to the pros. High school, there were times where they'd make us do wall sits when we didn't mm-hmm. do stuff right. And I mean, my legs were burning. I'm, mm-hmm. And you're getting up and they were throwing balls at us, and, sure. and saying, get back down, boom. And you'd have to catch them. But it kind of got to a love respect thing. And it was laughter sometimes.
And that was high school?
That was high okay. school. And there might be tears sometimes.
Sure.
And we're on the line and we're like, guys are falling
right.
down. We can't go again. Go again. But that was a different time. I take it to college, and my college coach was really hard, and especially on me. But not to that level. I take it to the NBA and go with Coach Riley with the Knicks. I mean, that stuff was really hard. But never like I can't go, and now I feel like I'm going to pass out. This is why I say that, though, for me. I tell my son this and other athletes. I never go into a camp not testing myself on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I would get on a treadmill and I'd push myself, Grant, to the point where I thought I might faint. I don't want the coach to find that spot.
That's
I want
true.
To find it on my own. But I would say no. I got really close, but never.
Okay.
I never thought it was from him saying, I don't like you or something like that.
But you and I was in this situation in college lacrosse. There are players on your team that aren't
to your level
for that type of
yes.
physical regimen. We had a defenseman that I was on lacrosse, and we used to have before the season started, we had a conditioning period that lasted a couple weeks mm-hmm. inside a gym where we would not only run up and down the court, we would go up and down stairs and do it. And the bigger athletes,
yes,
that was a real difficult regiment for them.
Right.
So you're a guard. You're playing, let's say, I'm making this up, maybe you got a guy that's, I'm going to throw out a name, Oliver Miller.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so yep. I'm going to use him because he played in Sacramento and people yep. remember him.
Know Oliver well.
So I guess the question I'm asking you is, in this particular instance, today the university accepted legal and moral responsibility for the mistakes made by their athletic training staff on that May 29th, which ultimately led to the death of lineman Jordan McNair from heat stroke. Then you hear about some of the other things
mm-hmm.
that were allegedly going on
right, throwing
at
weights.
Maryland right, and yep. stuff like that. I was listening to Jim Rome this morning. He had the Nebraska head coach on, Scott Frost.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Jim asked him about the Maryland story, and he said, well, we are not going to do that at Nebraska, blah, blah, blah. And he said in part of his answer, he said, the reality is this is a new era and a new day and age.
It is.
Okay?
Yep.
When I played football, even in high school, we would have drills where there was head contact on every single play when we were practicing. Okay? Like, in other words, it was the tough man drill.
Yes.
All right? You got to shed a blocker, And then you got to tackle the ball carrier all within 2 seconds.
No doubt.
All right. So, and they would line up cones on the side of you. You had to stay within the cones. You had to beat the guy in front of you as the guy with the ball was running towards you. So there was contact with the guy in front of you, and then boom, immediate contact with the ball carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And that was every single day. And the drills you couldn't do that today. So
no.
we everything is different now. Science is different. Technology, the data, what we know can harm the body permanently and what can't. Look at the NFL. Look at the rule changes.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted to ask you, because you played for – I heard Pat Riley had the –
Whoa.
Right?
Grant.
All right. So let's talk about Pat Riley.
Okay.
Because if and I heard the same thing about Byron Scott.
Yeah.
And you know why?
Well, he came
Byron
through.
Scott, that's right.
Absolutely.
I heard like where as a from a player's perspective, I'm not going to say Pat Riley went overboard because I don't know. I wasn't on a Pat Riley team, and I don't. But I did talk to players that played for Byron Scott.
Yes.
And the term they used is he would take you right up to it.
And in my opinion, you got to do that. Because you got to find out where you're at. Now, I've been in situations where we stuck up for a player who couldn't do it, and kind of coach wants to see that. Okay, you sit down. We'll run it for you. But, like, Pat would have timed runs that you had to do, and if you didn't make it, you had to come the next day, and you had to keep doing it until you got it. We had charging drills. I look up. I'm standing in the key. On my right is Charles Oakley. At the top of the key is Patrick Ewan, and on the left is Anthony Mason. And there's me in the middle. You got to take three charges, buddy. Take the charge. Jump up. Here comes another one. Jump up. Here comes another one. The gym is three courts wide. You're playing in the middle court. There's no out of bounds, Grant. Wherever the ball goes, you go get it. It builds up the type of competitiveness and drive and desire that a team sometimes needs. Can you go overboard? Yeah, but going to that point, in my opinion, a lot of times you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. All right, let's get to a call before we get to the break with Jim. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Grant. I just wanted to comment. I mean, I completely 100% disagree with you about, you know, players. I think without players, you won't have any media, number one. Number two, you know, at the end of the day, they're just human beings. And when a player's doing good, the media writes great about him. But, you know, when he has one bad game, and I'll give you an example in Oklahoma City, Kevin Durant had one bad game, and, you know, the local newspaper posted Mr. Unreliable.
Well, first of all, you don't understand anything about professional sports. That's the first thing. Okay. Every athlete that comes, you have no concept of what's going on behind the scenes. You have no concept what it's like to be a professional athlete. You have no concept what it's like to cover a team. You're clueless. So I'm not even going to continue the conversation. All right. I'm not even going to continue. All right. What we will do, though, we are going to talk with Seth Everett from NBC Sports. We're going to talk some baseball with Seth. And I want to get his take because every time we've had Seth on, you know, we've talked to him about the big teams and the stuff. I want to get his take on what he sees going on in Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yeah.
And how bizarre is not even the right word. How unlikely is this particular story that's unfolding right now in our backyard in Oakland? I want to get his perspective on that as a guy that has followed baseball and covered baseball for a long time. And see if he thinks they are good enough, all right? And I said this on the air yesterday. They're only two games back of Houston. You know what the difference is of winning the division and being a wild card?
Yeah.
If you're a wild card, you're going to have to play the Yankees,
yes.
Which you could beat the Yankees.
Yeah.
But then the winner of that plays to Boston.
Oof. Goodness.
If you win the division in the American League West, you're playing Cleveland.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying that's an automatic ticket, but I'd rather play Cleveland.
Right, especially right now.
Right. And they got a very nice 1-2-3 rotation
they
with
do.
Kluber, and they've got good pitching. But I'm still, give me Cleveland.
Yeah, anytime.
Right. All right. So we're going to talk with Seth about that when we come back on Sports 1140 KHTK. All right, Grant Napier. Doug Christie, hope you are having a good day. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. All guests come to you via the Fire Wings hotline. Try one of their delicious flavors of wings today. Fire Wings, just Winger. As promised, joining us as an NBC MLB analyst is Seth Everett. Seth, it's Grant and Doug. How are you?
How are you, my friend?
Doing good. You know, I said, you know, the one thing I'm going to talk to Seth today that I have not talked to him about ever since he started coming on this show is a team that plays in the East Bay of California, and that would be the Oakland A's. I say Oakland A's. Sure. You say what?
Well, the Oakland A's are a franchise that I admire. They have had a colored history. They have had a lot of issues, but their ballpark right now is an eyesore. They had 11,000 people last night for a pennant race game. The A's are doing a nice, charming thing, but this is not Moneyball 2 Electric Boogaloo. This is an eyesore for the sport. And you know, the sport doesn't need eyesores. They have enough. That sport's in a crisis. You didn't have me on to talk about that, but that sport is in a crisis. And for the Oakland A's to not have fixed the stadium, I told Rob Manfred the minute he took office, fix Oakland. Don't worry about Tampa. Tampa will solve itself because there's too much motivation and their owner is too motivated. But Lou Wolf is in a pickle because he can't leave the television market, so he's stuck there, and the Giants have territorial rights on virtually any place he wants to go. So he has to figure out how to make Oakland work. And I would lock themselves in a room. I would get Larry Bear and all the people from the Giants to sit in a room. I would lock them in. I would get them a bucket of KFC, and I would tell Lou Wolf, do not walk out of that building without a deal. Because Peter Angelos once said about the Montreal Expos, over my dead body are they coming to D.C. Okay. There's a team called the Washington Nationals just heard right. of the All-Star game.
Yep.
Seth, in your opinion, do you have a solution, the beginning of a solution? Is it a stadium? How do you solve the problem in Oakland?
Well, it's got to be, you know, look, I wanted Fremont. I mean, no secret about that. I thought that beautiful drawing that I saw, and I'm sure you guys saw
yep.
it too.
Yep.
Like, I thought that was perfect. You know, the Giants think that is a threat to their business, and I'll say maybe it is. You know, I can understand the logic. You know, I'm in Seattle right now, and I am standing near an arena that was built purposely too small for the NHL. And let's call a spade a spade. If an NHL team in the 90s had come in when the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Nashville Predators came in, there is no way the Seattle Supersonics are in Oklahoma City.
Mm.
So what I'm saying is I understand the argument. And Barry Ackerley, rest in peace.
Yes.
Barry Ackerley was the owner of the Sonics.
Yeah.
He said, he looked me in the eye and said to me, because he knew I was a hockey nut. And he looked me in the eye and said, when we remodeled the Seattle Coliseum to become Key Arena, we didn't want to compete for the entertainment dollar.
Wow.
And he said it to me. And I never thought the Sonics would leave. But at the time, that was the dumbest thing I'd ever heard. At the time, I was furious because it limited my time in this city. Because if there was hockey, there would be basketball, and I never would have left.
Yeah, no, there's no question. All right, so we get all of that, and you're spot on, and we talk about that. But this team is 71-48, so stadium aside, issues aside, it's remarkable, sure. isn't it, that they've been able to do what they've done with – and again, Billy Beane seems to always pull this out of his hat every now and then. This is just remarkable to watch this team play.
It is. It is. And, you know, I slept on the A's for a little while. You know, I was, you know, I'm a Mariner guy. And, you know, I like the Mariners had won 25 one-run games in the first half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was like a kismet thing. What Oakland has done is they fortified their bullpen. This is a new model. You know, it's part of the sabermetrics, and it's a new model. The Brewers are doing the same thing. If you can't get a starting pitcher out there, go just get a bunch of relievers. And if your starter pitcher can get you five, you think you're going to win the game. And it's working for them. It's been great. Last night was a great game. And the Mariners had a great comeback. I just couldn't believe the empty seats.
Yeah.
That bothers me to no end. I'm not asking for 30. I'm asking for 20. Because
exactly. Absolutely.
I'm not asking them to get warrior percentages.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I understand what Oakland is. And I understand the community, and I don't spend other people's money unless they spend mine. You know what I'm saying? but
you have a market. That's the number six broadcast market. You can't find 20,000 people to go watch a pennant race game with the team that you're chasing for the wild card in there?
It's incredible. Seth, you talked about relievers. The Mariners have a new one, and his name is King Felix. How do you see that playing out? How does a guy like him, who's been so dominant, who's done so many things for our team in Seattle, how does he go there? How do you see him being successful in a new role?
Okay, I'll answer that question, but I get a follow-up because you reminded me of something. Mm-hmm. I think this is a matter of he needs to be throwing better. He needs to have a more fluid motion. When he was dominant, he looked effortless. And now it looks like everything is mechanics and everything's a struggle. And I understand he can't get the velocity, but I don't believe that he's not enough of a pitcher or not smart enough after all of his innings to not figure this out. And what he should be doing it in is short stints. I had said when the Mariners were challenging the Astros 2 months ago, I said, you don't know what you're going to get out of Felix Hernandez. And that's why they should have been in the market for a Cole Hamels. You know what I mean? That was my attitude at the time. Aren't you in the documentary Sonic Skate?
Yes.
That is one of my favorite films. I watched it on the airplane here.
Oh, did you? Yeah, they came to my home in Seattle,
Alan,
and filmed it. And interestingly enough, being a guy that was born and raised in Seattle, drafted by the Sonics, never played for them, went through all the contract stuff. Grant and I are going to be there for the preseason game, which is likely going to be the final game. So that it's kind of everything comes around, Seth.
Yeah, right. Well, if I need to get here for that because I was standing outside the building and I took pictures of it. That I saw James Brown perform in that building. So that building has memories for me.
Absolutely.
I saw him with Nate McMillan and Dwayne Casey. That's names up in my
head. Yeah.
And I saw James Brown. And, I'm a Prince guy. And James Brown was amazing. I couldn't believe it was in 1998. You know, I always joke about my Sonics days because I never saw Sean Kemp.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Vin Baker. Okay. I never saw George Karl. I saw Paul Westphal.
Yeah.
Very, very, very different.
Very.
Hey, you know, Doug and I were talking about this the other day, and I'm glad that you brought that up. The fact that they're going to spend $750 million to, you know, basically make Key Arena a new facility. And I think so hockey's going to come. And then, Seth, as you were just talking about, it will only be a matter of time before the NBA is back there. How do the folks in Seattle feel, though, about the Key Arena site and that money being spent in that? Was that the only possibility of making it happen?
Yeah, because, you know, there was an original pitch to build an arena near Safeco Field and the Seahawks Field, whatever that place is called.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a traffic study, and it said that it would crush the lower downtown. Look, I don't know. I mean, traffic stinks everywhere. You know what I mean?
Right.
Traffic in Seattle is not good. The population's increasing. Like, I don't know that the basketball arena would have been that bad. I know it was very charming, but when Chris Hansen, who's an investor, had said he was going to build that arena in lower downtown, they took him out for beers. They serenaded him on the radio. Like, I just thought it was a little premature. To get public money to do anything is very hard, you know, but this is a city that almost lost their baseball team and almost lost their basketball team.
Yep.
And ironically, there is a proposal to contribute $180 million on that hotel tax to extend and get extend their lease 25 years. The Mariners' lease is up at the end of the year.
Really?
And they are going to sign a 5-year extension and hope to renegotiate. But they can't get $180 million for
that's unbelievable.
For Safeco Field.
Come on,
man.
And come on. And you're gonna do $700 million of public money to get to get a basketball arena. And here's the thing about the hockey team. They have the hockey team. They already have the ownership group.
Right.
They have all those things. What they don't have is an NBA team. I do not know how an NBA team is going to come here. I don't see relocation, and I don't see expansion. I don't think the product can sustain expansion.
Well, I know one thing. New Orleans is a candidate because that is a – no one goes to the games down there. Nobody cares about them down there. I could see that happening. I'm with you on expansion. It doesn't make a lot of sense right now, but I got to tell you, there are some teams in the NBA right now that I think are really struggling.
It's fair. That's fair. I think that, you know, the NBA has done a remarkable thing about, you know, and I give kudos to the NBA because they have created, their players have become reality show characters.
Yep.
And through Instagram and Snapchat and Twitter and
they're phenomenal at marketing. Phenomenal. Absolutely.
I mean, but it's not even marketing. Like, well, LeBron James was on Teen Titans Go. it's amazing. It's amazing what they've done. But what you never hear is somebody scrutinizing the third quarter of a Denver-Portland game. Like, no one ever does that. They do that in baseball all the time. They say strikeouts and shifts and all the thing. They never do that in the NBA because the NBA has become incredibly likable.
Yeah.
And that's remarkable. That's remarkable. And but I don't know if that product can, you know, with so few really good teams out there, how do you add two more bad teams?
Yeah, that's
I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, that's going to be the question. You're probably going to have to go to markets that can hold on and sustain them. In MLB, two teams that one is the Astros. Injuries, do you think they will be back? And also the Dodgers, no Kenley Jansen. How do you see both of these teams as the year progresses?
Well, Kenley Jansen, that's very scary. That's, you know, he had to have an electric shock to get his heart rhythm back to regular. I take as long as you need, you know, for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I read that story. That kind of made my jaw drop. As far as Houston, I think, you know, look, on paper, they are clearly the best team. But I thought the Mariners really took it to them. For four games, and they beat their stud pitcher. They beat Morton. You know, that it wasn't just come from behind victories. So it's not a statement about it was a statement by Seattle, but it's more, I think the Astros got a wake-up call. And I like the competition. I like how the Astros have it, both the A's and the Mariners challenge them, will push them. And I think if they can sustain it, it'll fortify them for the playoffs. Mm. Because if they have another season, remember at the end of last season, they wasted their time. They did nothing for 2 months. You know, they were talking about how to stay motivated. Well, they're not going to have that problem this year.
Yeah.
Seth, always a pleasure having you on, man. Thanks, and we'll catch up with you again. Be well. Take care.
Good talking to you guys.
Hey, always a pleasure. All right. Seth Everett, NBC Sports. Tell you what, we'll come back. We'll get some reaction if you want. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Grant Napier, Doug Christie on Sports 1140. All right, Grant Napier, Doug Christie, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Jerry, what's going on?
Hey, guys, just making a drive home. Thanks for taking my call. Wanted to talk about that tribute to Barry Bonds the other day. God, I hate the Giants for that reason. I mean, Hank Aaron will always be my guy. But guys like Clemens and Bonds, they were bad for baseball. And I realized that they weren't the only guys doing that a large part of it was. But those numbers mean something to me. Obviously, they don't mean something to the Giants organization. I like what the Yankees did with A-Rod and sitting him down and not letting him get to 700. And I think Bud Selig should be pulled out of the Hall of Fame. He was the one who allowed all that stuff. I don't understand that. But thanks for letting me vent.
All right, you vented. First of all, Barry Bonds was not bad for baseball. He was great for baseball. He and Mark McGwire revived baseball and Sammy Sosa. And here's the other issue. I'm not a Barry Bonds fan. I've never been a Barry Bonds fan, and I never will be a Barry Bonds fan. I despise the guy. But they saved baseball through that era, okay? And here's the other thing, all right? And I totally agree with what you said about Bud Selig. I totally agree with you about Bud Selig. But fans that go to games don't care whether the players that they're watching are on steroids or not. They don't care. They absolutely do not care in any way, shape, or form. If you take a poll of every fan that walks into a ballpark or walked into a ballpark to watch Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, or Barry Bonds play and ask them, hey, the players that you're watching are taking steroids. Do you care? They'll be back the next night to watch it. They didn't care. They don't care. Now, I'm not condoning it. I'm not saying it's right because it wasn't. But the fans that go to the games and pay that money, they don't care. Makes no difference to them. It's the same thing. Fans that go watch boxing matches, they don't care if a guy gets his brains beat in. They don't care. They're not the ones in the ring. They're there because they enjoy it. You think they care about the ramifications that the sport of boxing has on a human being's life? They don't care.
No, and how you can quantify that, Grant, is a lot of times you see football. Guy gets absolutely crushed.
Right.
He gets wheeled
off. And they go nuts.
And, you know, everyone claps for him, and then the game goes right back to it. It's like, do they care? People are, I think, compassionate and care, but I understand your point.
Hey.
Your point is, we came to see what we want to see. Let's see it.
Remember our Monday Night Football, the opening they had where the helmets would collide and explode?
Yes.
You know, and then on ESPN, it was a weekly thing, and I can't remember the name.
Come on, man.
Yeah, but it was not only a come on, man, but it was like jacked up. Thank you. Jacked up, right? Right? Now, jacked up might be great for the person watching it. Jacked up wasn't great for the person that was getting jacked up.
And they had some serious hits.
Right?
Woo!
How about that Verlade, man? He's like he's mentally sharp, isn't he?
The dude is nimble as they get when it comes
Nimble is not a word I would use.
I'm talking about his brain is nimble. And Chris, you know what? So, I think you're probably pretty nimble, actually.
I can guarantee he's not pretty nimble. But anyway, jacked up.
I'd like to see you try to tackle him in that room. I bet
you
he gets
him.
Out.
I could.
No way.
He wouldn't get out of the room, dude.
You're moving some furniture in here.
I'll tell you, I wouldn't use my head because I don't want to get a flag. I don't want to leave it in my head.
You just got to, you know, go back to your rugby
days. No, but seriously, back to that, though. I've always said this. Fans don't care. Like, I mean, I hate to say this, but when I go to an NFL game and I see a great collision, I'm like, wow, look at that. That was great. You know, I'm not thinking about the ramifications. I don't like, first of all, I don't like to see athletes get hurt. You know, I've always been very consistent with that. But it is awesome to see a hard hit in a game. I mean, same in hockey. How many times do you and I watch hockey and we go, whoa, right?
Because if you've ever played sports like that, that level of physicality, it's saying things on the ice, on the football field, and it sets a tone for your team, whether you like it or whether you don't like it. It always has been part of the game. Now it's beginning not to be part of the game.
Yeah. All right. 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. But for that last call, Barry Bonds was not bad for baseball. Barry Bonds was great for baseball because he had TV ratings explode. People were buying tickets all over Major League Baseball. McGuire, Sosa, Bonds, that whole era. I mean.
Napes.
Yes.
Should Bonds get in the Hall of Fame?
Who?
Bonds. Because just my opinion. I'm a Barry Bonds fan, by the way.
He should get into the Hall of Fame, yes.
Just based upon what he did in
Pittsburgh. He should get into the Hall of Fame.
Do you think he will?
Yes, I think he will.
I think
the steroid era eventually will get into the Hall of Fame.
Do you think that people don't look at the fact that steroids was probably being used by pitchers as well as
We know that already.
Yeah. So why are people then so hard on sluggers?
Well, they've been hard on Roger Clemens. He's not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, if I'm throwing a juiced up ball, swinging a juiced up bat.
Very simple. It's much easier to tell a batter on steroids than a pitcher because all you got to do is look at their numbers from one year to the next and then look at their body, and it's pretty obvious. It's not as obvious with a pitcher.
Okay.
In my opinion.
I got you. Okay. Okay. Well, so how long? Because there's a limit in baseball, is there now? Or maybe it's a limit in all of them to get into the Hall of Fame on how many shots you get at it?
I believe probably within 2 years, I think he will be in.
Wow. Well, he put in his work in Pittsburgh before he ever even got into all the stuff. So I would think that he would get in.
My biggest problem with Bonds is he was an idiot. He was disrespectful. He was a prima donna. He was a brutal guy to be around when he played. But you cannot deny the numbers. I agree with that previous caller. I do not consider him as the all-time home run leader, and I never will. And I don't consider him as the guy that holds the record for most home runs in a season. I don't personally. I don't acknowledge him for that.
You think he and Stanton don't get along because he beat Stanton in the home run derby? That's my understanding.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
At batting practice, they had a little.
When was this? Oh, is that right?
When he was in down in the Marlins.
I didn't even know that.
In Barry B.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
It's pretty impressive by Mr. Bonds, by the way.
All right. We will be back. Hour number two rolling right on. Grant Napier, Doug Christie on this Tuesday. This is Sports 1140 KHTK.